All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubow. And if you've ever wondered how someone navigates the intricate game of commercial investing for over four decades, facing ups and downs in the real estate market, well, today's guest on the show, a seasoned entrepreneur and real estate mogul, Paul Montelongo from San Antonio, Texas, has not only weathered the storm, but thrived in them. He's here to share his profound insights he's gained from over 40 years of experience in the industry. Welcome to the show, Paul. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Hey, thanks, Bryce. I'm glad you queued it up that they're going to be profound insights. I'll have to come up with some now.
Well, you know, we
That was
try
a
to.
pretty profound introduction.
Well, Chat GPT gave me a hand, so it's a profound piece of technology.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, 40 years, that would have started you in like the early 80s.
Yeah.
Did you start directly into real estate, or was this like your second or third career, or you know, why real estate in the first place?
Well, actually, my first piece of real estate I purchased when I was 17 years old.
There you
So my
go.
father, who did not own any real estate, he was actually a math teacher and a high school football coach. Somewhere along the road, he says, "You need to go buy real estate." So I took him at his word. And so from working in the summers and doing the things we do as kids, you know, mowing lawns, raking leaves, washing windows, those kinds of things, I saved up my pennies and I purchased a very small, tiny piece of land in a cul-de-sac, residential, and I paid $7,500 for it. And I was going to build a speculative house, sell the house, make tens of thousands of dollars. But I didn't have the first clue about how to build a house at 17 years old, you know. So that property sat there. 2 years later, I put a what we call a bandit sign now, piece of cardboard on a telephone pole that said "land for sale." And I had my parents' home telephone number on that piece of cardboard. Somebody called and I sold it. I sold it for $15,000. So I doubled my money in 2 years. And at that point, I was hooked, you know. So, yeah. Of course, I did the thing you're supposed to do as a seasoned real estate investor. You know, you're supposed to reinvest the money, right? So I took it and I bought a motorcycle and a truck, as any
I guess if
19-year-old
the
would.
truck was like the starting of like a contracting business or something, but sometimes you do just buy a truck, you know, you doubled up on a piece of land in under 2 years. I mean, that's a great result. So after the truck and that piece of land, that brings you to probably you're 19 now.
So a couple of years later, I bought a house, remodeled it, flipped it, bought the house across the street, remodeled it, flipped it, and then I just started doing single family residences, cash flow, buy, flip, buy, fix, and flip. Along the way, I had a contracting business. I had an insurance restoration business, and several other businesses related to real estate in the construction industry. And I was always doing real estate, buying and selling homes. Then moving along in 2013, I had my first opportunity to buy a multi-unit property. And this probably takes us to where we are in this conversation. And so that was a marina and an RV park combined. The marina had 115 spaces. The RV park had 24 spaces, but I removed those RVs and built 38 tiny homes and became an Airbnb super host. So all of a sudden I had 150, whatever that number is, 153 spaces that I was renting out. That piece of property also contained other streams of revenue. It was a membership club and a boat club and boat rental and some warehouse storage, et cetera, and all told, at one point there were 13 streams of revenue on that piece of property. And so that was really my first dip in, after all those years, that was my first dip into multi-unit, multi-check, multi-streams of income type of property. And I was hooked because it was just the scale of it made so much sense to me.
When you got a lot of different, you've got a bunch of hedged income streams. It's not just like one, first of the month type check.
That's right. And it was seasonal. A lot of the property was seasonal. So when, you know, like when pool memberships were down, well, then, you know, a holiday cabin rental
Airbnb,
was up.
Yeah, the cabin rentals were up.
And vice versa. And we had events there and so forth. So, you know, year round, there were all kinds of streams of revenue going on. And so that was a really good example of what it took to operate a property. And because of my construction background, I was able to renovate it and fix it up and everything. And that led to, well, let me back up half a second, because I know a lot of people in our business, a big challenge they have is raising capital, raising money for these kinds of projects. And that was my challenge as well. I thought with all my years of experience and all the people that I knew from all the businesses that I'd ever done, I could just flip through my iPhone
and make a couple of calls
and raise $1.4 million, which was the raise for that property. Well, I raised a whopping total of zero. I raised no money. This was about a $2.6 million purchase, and we were coming upon closing, and I was really sweating, and somebody introduced me to a gentleman, and in 9 days, he raised the $1.4 million, became a partner in the property. So that gave me the knowledge and the motivation that raising capital is possible. And he taught me, mentored me, he taught me how the steps of how to do it and how to talk to people and where you get those kinds of contacts and so forth. And so since then, you know, I've been able to cycle through and acquire well over 1,000 units. We currently have 1,057 under management units right now, somewhere in the range of $70 to $72 million under management. And we've been able to raise a bunch of money to be able to do that. But that just didn't happen overnight. That took some time, and it took some relationship building and some knowledge and insights about how to raise capital. And now we're where we are, and because of, you know, the experience and the time frame.
So with the before you got into the commercial space, how were you financing your single family ventures?
Like, yeah, everything that I had done. Yeah, everything that I had done prior to that was self-funded. So the businesses that I opened and operated, the properties that I purchased, I self-funded them, or I got a loan, you know, to match my funds. I never partnered. I never raised capital with anybody. I never raised capital for any projects. Everything was self-funded. And so the model of syndication and the model of going out to other people to build a fund or to have a collective group of individuals come in with syndicate money was a whole new concept to me. But once I learned that concept, I was like, oh, this is how this is done.
Yeah, this is how they're able to do that. And it's, you know, that it's interesting because people sometimes think that self-financing is like bad, inherently bad. It's a limited thing. Now, it can be, but you went out and got your own loans and you had your own, you know, cash to do these things as you're flipping up. And in some cases, people don't have access to those things. So they have to go and bring people in maybe on their first flip or maybe on their first rental. But you can do it. You know, you can see here, Paul's been able to do it in a self-financing way. But there always seems to be a point where our dreams outpace our bank account, where we're like, I want to buy this mobile home park with all these boat launches. And then you're like, okay, I do need $1.4 million. So was the guy who brought you in the capital on that first project, would you call him a syndicator? Was he specifically specialized in raising funds for commercial projects?
He was both. He was both an operator, owner-operator, and a syndicator. Of course, he raised money for his own projects, and then he also looked for other projects that fit his investor base. Mm-hmm. And so that particular project fit his investor base. It had good projected returns. It had, you know, it was an interesting property. And that's why he was, and he had a very, very broad base of technology-oriented people. And so what I learned was technology-oriented people in that instance, they understood that real estate was important to have. They just didn't have the time, or they didn't have the knowledge, or, you know, or they didn't have the capacity to be in that sort of real estate business, but they did have the money to invest. Mm-hmm. And so this is the other thing that we've learned through the course of our career here. And that is, you know, physicians, dentists, chiropractors, technology people, our primary or our main investor right now is a business owner. So a business owner that is in some other kind of business other than real estate. Mm-hmm. And they understand the power of investing in real estate while they maintain their normal business that they yeah. operate and that makes, you know, their living and that makes their that grows their wealth. And so, and I think that's a result of, I can relate to business people because I've had an entire career of being a business owner mm-hmm. and I understand the time crunch that they're in. And I understand the value of having other people do stuff for you. And so that's the value that we bring to a business owner. And we find that we've attracted business owners more than anything. Yeah, we have physicians and we have technology people and that sort of thing, those sorts of careers, but primarily business owners, professional business owners.
Yeah, and it's likely that they're diversified too. It's probably unlikely that they're not just in real estate, but you can see that real estate, and I say this to people when they're, one of the main questions when people talk about raising capital is like, well, they're smart people. Why wouldn't they just do it themselves? And anyone who's been in the business for any amount of time knows the amount of time it takes to manage real estate. Like it's not passive. Even the most passive streams of income still require some amount of attention, and they don't want any attention. They have their attention on their like business or their practice or their, you know, their technology business that they're in. It's, they don't have time to go down and deal with the tenants and the right. toilets and stuff. So that is a reason why they'll invest. What have you found is a reason why these people invest with you?
Well, because I can speak their language. And so the language that I speak, let me back up half a step. When I buy an apartment complex, which is now what I do, I buy apartment complexes and self-storage, and I build mm-hmm. self-storage. So when I buy an apartment complex, I'm buying someone's business. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm buying the buildings, and yes, I'm buying the land, but I'm also buying their personnel. I'm buying their clients. We call them tenants. I'm buying mm-hmm. their really good Google reviews. I'm buying their crappy Google reviews. Mm-hmm. I'm buying their marketing. I'm buying all the successes of the property. I'm buying all the problems of the property. So mm-hmm. I am buying that business. And it's my job, it's our team's job to go in and change that business around and make it profitable and make it ours, make it our business so that it reaches its potential. And so when I approach a business owner and I say, well, I'm in the mergers and acquisitions business. I'm buying a business. Yeah, that business is an apartment complex, but I am buying that business. Now there's a commonality there. That business owner understands what it's like to own and operate a business and mm-hmm. may even understand what it's like to acquire a business or to merge with the business. And so there's a commonality in language there because of the way that I view buying an apartment complex or buying a storage unit, a storage mm-hmm. complex, because I'm buying someone's business. I'm buying their problems.
A lot of people look at it as a real estate acquisition, but you know, and that can feel that way when you go to buy an apartment and it's the, you know, it's the owner's name on the offer and this and that and the other. But it becomes really obvious when the conversation shifts to, well, why don't you just buy the business that's holding the apartment, and then there's, you know, different tax ramifications and things like that. And so it definitely is. And I like how you said the clients are the tenants and the Google reviews and like that coin operated laundry machine that there's some lift for us. And it's a business.
If there's a flower shop down at the corner that you have your eye on and you want to buy it, you're not just buying the flowers and the cases. You know, you're buying everything that goes with it. If they have employees that are not doing the job, you get to put new employees in. If they have marketing that's not doing the job, it's your job now to ramp up the marketing. So you're buying every aspect of that flower business. Same thing with real estate, multifamily mm-hmm. and storage. I'm buying every, because once that seller sells, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never hear from him or see him again.
Yeah, especially so, if they think they got the better end of the deal, they're like, oh, I got you. That roof isn't what you thought it was, and they
we gave closed you the on salute. We closed on a transaction earlier this year. Actually, it was the last business day of 2022, so it was not quite a year ago. And that seller owed us some materials after the closing. And, you know, there was a transfer process. We didn't hear from him for 30 days. Hmm. We thought he completely ghosted us. Well, he had owned that property for 30 years. He was tapped out. Mm-hmm. Right. So he was tired, exhausted. And fortunately, he came back around and we tied up the loose ends and everything was fine. But that's an example of, you know, somebody's been operating a business. They get paid. He had a nice payday. They get paid. And we didn't hear from him for a while. So
he's probably in Mexico or something for 30 days. You know, I have no idea where he was. Not thinking about tenants and toilets for 30 days or the storage unit. He's not thinking about the units that haven't paid and they have to go and cut all the locks off and start the auction process.
But it took me a while to learn this conversation, right? Like, who is the investor that we attract? And mm-hmm. and every syndicator, every owner operator out there, I believe, attracts a certain kind of investor. I know
people
that
like us, right? The like known like trust.
Yes, exactly.
People want to do business with people like us that they like and that they also end up trusting. But specifically, like people like us,
people that have walked the same path. Mm-hmm. I have friends that are in the business just like I am, and their primary investor are physicians. Well, guess what they were in another life? A physician.
Yeah.
So I'd say if you're going to do this, if you're going to be a syndicator, if you're going to be an owner operator and syndicate, take a real close look at the life you've lived and the professional life you've lived. And I would go right back to that life immediately. And
that was a big challenge. That was a big challenge for me raising capital because I came from an industry that was relatively impoverished. You know, the music industry hasn't been known for creating millionaires on scale like it did in the 70s and the 80s, you know? And so when I moved from the music industry, I had a business where I was recording artists and stuff like that. And I just couldn't break the ceiling of income because it was like bleeding a stone. Like these artists make music, a product that's free. Like what kind of business model is it that where you're whatever you produce is free? And so the guy who's manufacturing it, I like look at my contact list. Imagine like, I'm going to raise a $1.4 million from all these broke musicians. It wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
However, what I have found is tapping into the people that are like me, who have that same story, who got out of the music industry, still have that hustle, still have that like drive to own something and do something. They just ended up in a different business, like usually real estate, because it's the one that has the least amount of like education to get in. So let's talk about what your business does now. And before the show, you'd mentioned that there's a way that they can get involved in learning a little bit about how you're able to put these things together.
Yeah, let's go back to your music example for a moment. So in our mentoring program, if I were mentoring you, I'd dive in a little deeper and find out some more answers from you. But I would bet there are all kinds of verticals in the music business with people in them that will invest in real estate. Producers, directors, mm-hmm. studio owners, other vendors, owners of the vendor establishments, et cetera.
Yeah, so, the venues. And I found that to
venues,
be
yes, yes.
Not the artists, but it was the auxiliary people that owned a recording studio and they've been there for 30 years and it's appreciated to 1.3 million and they owe 300,000 on the mortgage. And it's like, hey, can you ever thought about
the managers or the agents of musicians, et cetera. So that's part of, you know, what we do when we mentor in that, you know, we do a deep dive and I do it based on my experience because, you know, I got on the job training really. And so we do a deep dive and we're like, okay, where have you been and where else can we tap into that? But so right now we're buying strictly apartments and storage. I am looking at some other types of real estate, multi-unit real estate that seem to work in this particular economy. Here we are in November 2023, and over the last 12 months or so, it's been very challenging to find deals that work with the interest rates and with the current economic situation. But there are deals that work. We're just being much more prudent, and we're evaluating even I mean, we've always been very conservative, but we're being even more conservative now. So we're buying apartment complexes, and we're buying, we're building self-storage, and we really like, you know, we love doing the development of self-storage from the ground up. And we see 2024 and 2025 as years that are going to be full of opportunity. And so we've told our investor database, just hang on, because good deals are coming. And good.
Well, in the self-storage too, right? Because you've got people downsizing and on scale right now. We've got people in their like 40s, 50s, 60s moving from that five bedroom that the kids had into a condo. What are they going to do with all their stuff? They don't want to sell it. So they're having to store it. They're having to store it. So I'm definitely on board with the idea that storage is going to be emerging and especially expanding as people, you know, moved from the big house into the small house. You know, they don't need all that furniture, and they're sentimental and they hold on to it. Maybe the kids will need it, you know, and then no one ever actually comes and gets it, but it's in there and it gets a monthly rent and there's no tenant or toilet over there. So
that's right. That's my favorite part.
Yeah. Well, there might be one tenant toilet, which is the guy who like locks it up and unlocks it in the morning. But how do people participate with you in these deals? And, you know, is there a website, or, you know, how do people get a hold of you if they want to connect with you guys and really dive into the commercial space?
Yeah, the best way is MontelongoCapital.com. And on MontelongoCapital.com, we have resources there that are free. I've got eBooks there, and I've got a newsletter there. We've got our deal sources there. And so that's the best way to stay connected to us. Anything Paul Montelongo on social media, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, and you can follow me and, you know, watch my educational pieces. We do retreats. We do mastermind retreats and private coaching. But our main focus is investing. And so by staying in communication with us, we're looking for two things. We're looking for deal source. We have a tremendous deal flow, and that's built from the relationships that we've developed over the number of years that we've been doing this. And so we continue to look for good deals, deal flow, and partners to help us with deal flow. And then the second thing, of course, that we are always in search of, and that is capital. Because as you grow and as you scale and as you add more product to your inventory and as you buy more businesses, you need more capital. And so we're willing to work with people that can help us raise capital for these businesses that we buy. And along the way, we mentor. And we teach and we train and we educate and we build a community of people that are like-minded people that get in these business buying opportunities together.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine, you know, one thing that people don't really think about when it comes to capital is they're like, oh, I've raised some capital. Yes. And that capital is some person's capital that one day they're like, you know what? I'm done investing. So they do exit. The capital does exit at one point, and you have to bring new capital in constantly. It's a never ending thing. You got to train. You know, I had a guy reach out to me the other day on social media. He says, I'm trying to raise capital. I'm at that point in my business. So you got to learn to raise capital. And especially in the commercial space, you need, you know, millions. So learn to raise it. If you don't, start learning. You're going to need to learn it before you actually need it. Because when need it, it's going to be really hard for you to get that capital in a timely fashion that you're going to be able to deploy it on that deal that comes across your desk. So that would be my advice is learn.
I'm asked all the time, should I find the money first or should I find the deal first? And my answer is yes.
Yeah, both.
You should always be looking for deals. You should always be evaluating deals, and you should always be planting the seeds for capital raising and building the relationships and doing the steps to have your capital in line. So both, you know, if you're in the business, you're doing both of those things at all times. We're evaluating deals. We're evaluating between 15 and 20 deals a week. And that's on a slow week. And so
that's a business, right? You know,
because the business, and we're in search for that, you know, for those diamonds in the rough that we can make really profitable.
Well, and when you brought that up about yes was the answer, I was thinking if you're just sourcing money or if you're just sourcing deals, you're a merchant. You're not a businessman. You're a service provider. You're probably a wholesaler of either. So if you want to be in business, you want to be in business on the highest level, it's when you can tie money, people, and deal together. When you can tie the people to do the deal, to fix it, the people that bring the money to fund it. And ultimately, if you can find the person or find the deal yourself, that's actually where you're able to have a business. Because if you're just running around finding deals, well, now you're probably a wholesaler. If you're just running around finding money, well, now you're probably a syndicator. If you're just fine, if you just know a bunch of contractors, well, you're a GC. So put it all together.
Yeah.
And usually it's money that's the missing quadrant. So check out the website and yeah. Go ahead.
One of the coolest examples that I've read about recently was Elon Musk. I just got finished mm-hmm. reading his book. And okay, he's building rockets and he's building cars and he's building tunnels and he's building all these things. And he's raising billions of dollars of capital to fund these projects. Mm-hmm. And it's an ongoing endeavor. And throughout the course of the book, there are numerous examples where he had to go out and raise capital for the next step or the next level of his business. And so us in the real estate business, if we're going to add volume, if we're going to add scale to our business, that requires capital. So you have to master the art of capital raising.
Yeah, he's a great capital raiser. I think people say, oh, he's a genius at building this and that and the other. And it's just like, yeah, maybe. But I think
both,
you know, under the hood, it's yes. You know,
well, but he has
skill
the ability
in raising money is
yes, because he has the ability to convey his vision.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so pare that down to what we do. Okay, I'm gonna go buy an apartment complex. I'm gonna go buy a business, someone's mm-hmm. business. That maybe is not failing, but it's just not maximizing its potential. So now that I can approach you and I can go, Bryce, this business is not failing, but when it maximizes its potential, you and I both will benefit and profit measurably. And here's mm-hmm. how we're going to do it. So now I've just conveyed the vision to you. And you know, if I can do it in a way that makes sense, and if I can back it up with data and get you on board, okay, it's an easy conversation, and that's what he's doing.
Yeah, and conveying the excitement. You know, you can sure. see that he's excited about what he's sure. doing, and if you're raising capital, you need to be excited about what you're doing. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to like express that and get other people excited. If you're not excited, maybe find something that you're excited about to raise money, because people will naturally pick up on that. And they're like, well, I'm not super excited about this apartment anyways. Well, neither am I then. And they're off. So just
that is true.
Stay excited. Stay excited.
That's very true. That excitement conveys.
Yeah. So give us the website again so people can get connected. And then I think we've eaten up enough of people's time, because they're obviously going to reach out and
great.
Definitely dive into what you're doing.
Yeah. MontelongoCapital.com. MontelongoCapital.com. And anything on social media at Paul Montelongo.
Oh, we forgot the master question.
Yeah.
Guys who have been in the business as long as you, if you could start all over again, what would you do differently?
It's real clear. It's real clear what I would do. I would learn to master the art of capital raising much, much, much sooner, mm-hmm. much sooner, because that allows you to scale. That allows mm-hmm. you to buy more. That allows you to build your wealth quicker. So yes, learn to evaluate deals. Yes, learn the ins and outs and the nuances of how to operate that business and how to operate a piece of real estate. Yes, do that definitely. And master the art of networking to raise capital. That's the one thing that I would say to anyone. Your value as a capital raiser to someone like myself, who's a very experienced owner and operator, is tremendous. And you'll get the experience as an owner and operator. Master the art of capital raising.
Yeah, it's like if you're going to do business in China, learn Chinese or learn Mandarin, because if you're going to do business, learn how to raise capital. That's the language of business. So
yeah, that's a good example.
I really appreciate your time, Paul. This is amazing. And, you know, it's a real gem for people to listen along to. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode.